On this week's show, 10 goals for Hollands and Blair in their massive scaffold win. We hear from boss Luke Jessop.
I think we was value for 10 today. Like, could have been 15, 16, honestly. But we will be doing everything we can.
But conceding 10, not quite so much fun for Welling Town's Kevin Oakes.
We were dreadful. That is one of the most gutless, poor performances I've ever seen.
As pitch problems continue, Dartford groundsman Jay Burkow insists grass is still the way forward.
If you're looking for a 3G to make income, then that's end of story, that's fair enough. But if you're looking at it to get games on, then why not invest that some of that money into a pitch?
And another mission for Nick and Kian as they watch the Stones at Coventry.
The noise in this place, genuinely, I think that this lot are going to learn what a non-league supporting crowd is like, genuinely.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of the Kent Only Podcast, sponsored by Sandwich Town Youth FC. And we've got three interviews for you to enjoy this week, as well as the return of our FA Cup match reporters, Nick and Kian. But unfortunately, as you surely know by now, the outcome for Maidstone United wasn't the same this time around. I'm John Phipps. I wouldn't say I've changed, but I've spent most of my day off today having a bit of a spring clean. And on the line now is the man, the myth, the legend, the 10K runner. It's Matt Gerrard. How has your recovery after the weekend been, my friend?
Good. Apart from Monday was a bit achy, but since then I've been good after I did my first 10K run in London on Sunday, which was very enjoyable. So sense of achievement for myself and my wife and sister-in-law who did it.
How was the experience of doing it in London? Were there big crowds lining the streets?
There was bands playing and things like that. 22,000 people did this run. So, it was quite a big event, quite nice. Running past the Shard and the Cathedral, St Paul's Cathedral. So it was all, really good. And the weather was good. So, and my leg, which I was concerned about, as I picked up an injury, did a job and it stayed fit. So, we did it in 1 hour, 9 minutes and 55 seconds on the time. So I thought it was going to do a bit a lot of that, but my leg held out. So, absolutely delighted, really. It was good fun.
Did you run together all the way around?
Yeah, we all went together. Yep. So my sister-in-law
did. Did you do the chivalrous thing and let the ladies cross the line before you?
No, we went across the line hand in hand. So we all did it together.
Oh,
my sister-in-law, she can do it in a lot quicker, but she stayed with us. So that was good. So, it was nice. A really enjoyable day. We had a nice day in London and we went to Seven Dials for some food. So, when I go to London, I think I should go more often because it is quite nice and enjoyable. So, it was really good,
I mean, someone who goes there for 4 or 5 days a week.
I can take it or leave it.
No,
that's true. Well, once you actually get there, I presume more problems with trains, is there?
I had great fun last night in that there was problems with the trains for hours. And eventually, I think I waited for about 3/4 of an hour at London Bridge Station, where normally there's a train every 20 minutes or so. Eventually, I managed to get home at 1:20 in the morning, which if that's not living the dream, then I don't know what is.
Well, could you drive if you wanted to? Or would you get charged, shed loads of money?
I think there is a car park that some of my colleagues use. But do you know what? By the time I've got, because it's such a distance from here anyway, I've driven an hour to get to Tunbridge. I might as well just hop on the train and have a half hour from there rather than, drive all the way up there. And I hate driving through London. It's one of the, it's the absolute pits. It's just awful. I just don't like it. I just don't like it.
But apart from that, have you been up to anything exciting? Apart from seeing 11 goal thrill at the weekend?
11 goal thrill at the weekend. I went out for a few drinks as well on Saturday evening, which was good fun. Nice to just have a bit of a chill.
What were you spending your extra day, apart from working, I presume, tomorrow?
I'm working, yeah. So, I've got no leap plans. I remember last time there was a leap year. Obviously, it was just before COVID hit. But it was the last Saturday that there would be the leap day until, I think, 2048, something like that.
Wow.
So if, as I was very much then, you were a keen park runner, it was a good chance to get the February the 29th ticked off on your days you've done a park run on. It was the only opportunity I was probably ever going to get in my lifetime to do it, because I probably I mean, well, I can't run far now anyway, but so I remember 4 years ago, it was a Saturday, and I went out
I did
of my
check,
way.
Actually, because I'm for work, we had to change if the system would break tomorrow, because if it was a weekday, so we did check that it was going to be a Saturday. Well, last time it was a Saturday. Useless information,
yeah. Yeah, and so that was my part on my part run experience on leap day 4 years ago. But no, I've got no real plans. You know, much like yourself, I'm already taken, so there's no one going to propose to me.
Do you think the news tomorrow will be full of that?
I did read somewhere in a well known national newspaper, Matt, that we don't talk about on here, but I did read that apparently 1 in 10. Women are planning to pop the question on Thursday. Obviously, this is one
that's bollocks.
Aren't already married or anything like that. But yeah, apparently so. And I did. I mean, obviously, when I first met the lovely.
Would you have been impressed if she'd asked you to marry? Again, from my testosterone viewpoint, surely it's a man's to ask a lady. But are we living in these times that women can do that? Can again? Am I getting into trouble there?
We did have that conversation. I was like, well, you know, I did say to her, if I haven't proposed to you by February the 29th, 2024, then be my guest. But I was very keen to make sure that I'd tied her down, so to speak. That's not the right terminology, is it? I'd put a ring on the finger before then. I mean, as it was, the actual ring only went on said finger less than a fortnight ago, despite having got engaged in the summer. But that's another story. I would have accepted it. I mean, it would have been I'd go and what would be on a Thursday and us both having jobs and stuff. But I would definitely have. I'd have been impressed, and I'd have said yes, 100%.
So I'm expecting a lot of. BBC, I don't watch Good Morning Britain, but it'd be full of women proposing to blokes, probably.
Absolutely.
A bit like exam day. Yeah. They must be loving it, Good Morning Britain tomorrow.
Oh, there's got to be an opportunity for it, hasn't there? Definitely. I'll bet there'll be some people in the paper as well that have, like, you know, written into the paper to say, will you marry me and stuff like that, you know. But fair play to it. And do you know what, Matt? I'm going to be honest and say that's an outdated tradition.
And we are
all
lovers, not fighters, mate. So
yeah, but it's an outdated tradition, because if a woman wants to propose to a man, she can do it any bloody day she wants.
Exactly, yeah.
So, I would have welcomed that any time from the love of my life. But as I say, I beat her to it, so it was fine.
Yeah, and if you are getting proposed to tomorrow after listening to the pub, what a day it's been for you.
Absolutely. Have a lovely time. I do wonder, though, now here's a question, and we will move on and talk about football soon. If the woman proposes to the man, does he then have to buy an engagement ring?
Oh, good question. Man doesn't have to wear a ring to be engaged, does it? Well, I don't wear a ring anyway, so, but. Interesting. I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows?
Well, does the have to ask the father of the groom?
Oh yeah.
How the marriage.
Who would have thought there'd be so many questions about a thing that's never going to happen?
I'm sure. Good Morning Britain. If you tune in from 6 o'clock tomorrow on the hour, every hour we'll answer these questions. So absolutely. You might not listen to the pod by then, but watch it back on ITVX, whatever it's called.
What we don't know, Richard Madeley definitely does. Anyway, exactly. It's our 286th episode this week, and that led me to the 286, London's only rock and roll orchestra, who, in their own words, are a multi-limbed Frankensteinian kind of experiment, which sees sonatas stitched up with synthesizers, ballets bisected by bass hooks. I listened to it a bit, and to be honest, I quite liked it. A good fusion.
They could have been one of the bands that were playing at my run-on. There was a lot of vocal groups there. They could have found them. I didn't see any in 286. Unless they did a lot of take that in a cappella, they might not have been in.
Absolutely. Yeah. I also found Intel's 286 computer, which sparked some sort of really vague memory of being at school and the computers being a 286 and then a 386, they were released a long time before I was learning that sort of stuff. So, Matt, I'm going to hope that your expertise is going to get me out of a hole here. Am I on the right lines?
Yeah, well, 486 was a big, I think that might have been one of the first business computers, a 486, but then until Windows came in, so yeah. Yawn.
It's so exciting, mate. I don't know what you're on about. Right, let's get on with the show then. And we're going to start at the game I was at on Saturday. Now, according to the Footballogy app, it was the 639th match I've been to at my 175th stadium. and the very first time that I've seen a side score 10 goals. Hollands of Blair was the venue, and it was the home side who racked up the double figures against bottom of the table Welling Town. The host had 6 by the break. Welling got one back early in the second half, but Blair got back on the front foot and soon had 9 before missing a hatful of chances to make it 10 in the final 10 minutes. But Will Oliver popped up quite near the end to complete the scoring and make it 10-1 at the end. A first home win in charge for their boss, Luke Jessop. And my first question was actually, could it have been even more?
Wow, yeah, I wasn't expecting that as an opening question. Yeah, I suppose so, yeah. Yeah, it could have been, I suppose, 15, 16, 17 maybe.
That's an unbelievable thing to be saying.
Yeah, like we were obviously blown away with the lads. Few new boys come in. But I think it was coming. If you'd have watched us at Lid last week, second half, yeah, it was coming. I would say all it was coming. That second half, we sort of blew Lid away and was unlucky to just come away with a loss, really. But with a few little additions that were on show today, you can see what we're capable of. So I think, yeah, the future's bright.
You got me delighted with the outcome today.
Yeah, you can tell by my smile. Yeah, we were blown away. Like, just the football on show, the dominance that you could see in possession, the multiple threats going forward. I think you see the build-up play from the back. You know, it may be regimes gone past. You wouldn't have seen that at Hollands and Blair. So now you can see it, and we're making use of the facilities. You've got probably one of the best pitches in the area, so why not play it on the floor?
I just said to Kevin, what do you say when you're 6-0 down at half-time? What do you say when you're 6-0 up?
To be fair, it's still a tough team talk, because the natural tendency would be probably to ease off the gas a little bit and maybe play within yourself. But if you were watching me and what I said to the lads is, like, we're not done. Like, we need to push our potential, push the boundaries, and 6-0... we were nowhere near done, in my view. And like you said earlier, could have been in the teens today comfortably, I would have said.
It's the sort of result people are going to, all across the county, all across the league, everyone's going to be looking and saying, that's a great result.
That was the intention, yeah. Hence why at 6-0 at half-time, a lot of what was being said was, it's time to make a statement to the league and show them what we're all about. And I think you saw it today. You know, I hope people have watched that. Be fair to Welling as well, because I did hear a few sort of negative comments, like, you know, Welling weren't very good. Well, admittedly, they weren't. I mean, I think they'd be the first to say that. But they got a 2-1 loss against Corinthians the other day. So, and I think that was 1-0 up. So, let's give us some credit. That's where I was at. The boys deserve it. You know, fair play to them.
It was nice for you to be able to rest a couple of your more experienced players as well by taking them off half-time. But what an impact they both had on that first half.
Just blown away. Like, when you've got players like that at your disposal, I mean, Chris coming across from Punjab and what he has shown you can do in 45 minutes of football. I mean, Rob could have had 5 or 6 in the first half. I think he's just told me that at the bar. He could have had 5 or 6 and he got subbed at half time. But again, it just goes to show, if you've got someone that knows where the goal is, you know, he's going to score goals. And he's got a hat trick in 38 minutes today, so fair play to him.
And Richard Atkins as well, to have him to be able to come on the bench and some header as well, wasn't it?
I would say that was a header for the ages. If back in the day, you'd probably know, like, maybe a Les Ferdinand or an Alan Shearer or, God, let's think. But yeah, look, there's probably the two best headers of the ball, maybe a Duncan Ferguson. But you see, like, he was upset to be left out. Like, I won't lie, he was upset to be left out. But I just felt that between him and Rob, I think we need to burden the load up top. And, you know, he wasn't happy, but I think even him at half-time, I heard something he said after about half an hour. He goes, I need to get on this pitch. And like I said to him, like, I'm gutted that I'm leaving you out of the starting 11. But, you know, he got his just desserts and come on. And that header would be, if you saw that in the Premier League, you'd probably be going crazy over it. It was that good.
And you've got to say, that's a brilliant attitude as well. Gutted to be left out. 6-0 up at half time when he comes on, but he still wants to get on there and go for the goals.
And gave everything. Like, the thing is, I think that's the mark of the man, and I would, you know, pay sort of him massive credit, because he told me before in those short terms he was going, I think that's poor from you, meaning me. But, you know, that's the, to be fair, what I said to my man, my staff, I said, that's the attitude I want. I want you to be upset that you're not starting. That's the exact response I wanted, because that shows he cares, he want to play. And then you saw him come on and he gives 100%. But no player's ever going to want to be managed or their minutes limited, shall we say. But, yeah, fair play to him.
I thought young West was pretty good as well. His goal was superb.
Yeah, if you'd have seen my interview with the KM in the midweek, yeah, like that kid's destined for higher things. He's going to be far beyond Hollands and Blair sometime soon. You look at him, he's a class act, and everything he's doing on the pitch, his touches, like some of the boys said today, Sam Stace goes, oh my God, what trick was that? And that's Sam Stace. Sam Stace has been around a bit. And you see him pulling out tricks and left, right and centre, bamboozling defenders. But yeah, fair play to him.
I suppose it's been a tough few weeks, hasn't it, with Scott going. He took some of the key men, and I know it took you a little while to get your first win. That first win here as well, he's go from here, don't you?
Yeah, like I've just said to the boys in the change rooms, I'm not a big one for speeches. I don't really believe in all that and hyping stuff up. I'd rather be a little bit more sort of natural with it. And I just said to the boys, I said, this, don't get carried away or believe that, you know, 10-1 was a drubbing. That's what we're capable of doing. And building off of that against next week against Rustall and then Irith the week after that, that's what we're going for. And, you know, maybe 10... is slightly unrealistic to expect every week, but I would say I think we was value for 10 today. Like, could have been 15, 16, honestly. But we will be doing everything we can.
It's the first time I've been here. Lovely setup you've got here. And, you know, less than a mile away, there's a full house for Football League team going on. So that shows the challenges that you're facing as a club, doesn't it?
It does show that. Yeah, I agree. Like, and you know, I saw people here when we arrived today that boys were, you know, come here for a few beers and have shot down to Gillingham, the Jewels. But I think they probably would have liked to have stayed now, had they known. And you see the numbers we're getting, results like that will only increase numbers through the door. And, you know, getting back to your initial question, what Rich and Wayne and Lee Spiller have done here at the facilities, I would, hard to say there's no better in the league. Maybe Whitstable was up there off the face of it, but yeah, fair play to him. What they've created here is nothing short of like unbelievable, really.
What can you achieve at this club?
What, as a manager or as a team?
As a manager and as a team. You know, because I suppose this season you're mid-table, there's some big spenders at the top. Lose a couple of them next season and it could be wide open again.
It could be wide open. As a manager, we've set out quite a clear 3 to 4 year plan that's still to be accepted by the board, but we've got a 3 to 4 year plan, and yes, that involves getting out of this league in no, you know, uncertain terms. We are getting out of this league one way or another, and ultimately, if I read into your question, is like, yes, that will involve a little bit more financial input from the club, and we've got a couple of sponsors that are waiting in the wings for next season, and we definitely intend to call upon that little war chest, shall we say. So yeah, that's the plan.
And I suppose just finally, you've scored 10 today. Best result as a manager, I guess, so far, and you must be, I'm just going to revel in it for the rest of the day and maybe the rest of the week.
Yeah, my wife's actually said that I might be happy tonight. And to be fair, that's, like, I see the sentiment in what she's saying. Is like, she sees the hard work. We were still signing players today at about 12:15 and dotting the I's and crossing the T's for, like, all the league... the league legalities and the I's and the T's and all the, yeah, it was hard work. I haven't slept a lot this week. I've been about 3 or 4 different games looking at players, but yeah, it's certainly hard graft, and when days like today come along, I think they should be cherished.
It's always an easy chat after a big win, Matt, and a fine result for him and his side on Saturday.
Yeah, well, yeah. dream. Where can it go? Can't get any, you know, where does he go from here after winning a game by 10 goals to one in his new position? But yeah, again, I'm admire a side that continues to do that, you know, 6-0 up, and clearly want to impress the manager by keeping going on. You've got a feel for Wellington, and we'll hear about them in a few minutes. But yeah, some old good faces on there. Rob Gilman, I see, scored. He was a good player for Dover back in the day. Rob Dines, he must be on it, getting on a bit as well. And Richard Atkins. But yeah, fantastic result for them. Now, clearly, he thinks they've got a chance to do well going forward. Yeah, what a result. What can you say after 10? What you, he mentioned there, it could have been. You, do you think it could have been more than 10? Did the goalie have a good game, more importantly?
Not really, no. but I think it probably should have been more. As I say, once they got to 9, they did create quite a few chances, and they were, you know, there were things that were that earlier in the first half probably would have gone in, were going just over or just wide, or Atkins had one chance that was saved by the keeper, and I was stood on the side and he looked desperate at the linesman hoping that the flag was going to go up because he knew he should have scored, but it didn't. But yeah, that they just played really well, and you know, obviously, Dines with his hat trick gets the plaudits. He was a real menace. But Chris Edwards in that first half, absolutely brilliant. Recent arrival from Punjab. I think it was his debut on Saturday. But he played at right back, and he just made them tick. You know, he got down the flank and he put good balls into the middle and really helped them on their way. And I thought that he was excellent. And what a luxury for the boss to be able to take off those two players at half time in Dines and Edwards, and then bring on players like that. And you've mentioned Atkins there, and I thought, as you heard us talking about there, I thought he was excellent. You know, he's a well-known goal scorer in these parts. He's been banging the goals in for years, but he came on and he gave his all. He really was desperate to get on the score sheet. He gave it a big celebration when he scored his goal, which I think was the 8th. But I thought, do you know what, fair play to him, because it would have been easy for him, with the conversation he's obviously had with his manager there, it would have been easy for him to have a bit of a sulk and sit there and say, no, not interested. He wanted to get on, he wanted to score goals, and he wanted to prove his worth to his manager. And you know, absolutely fair play to him. And his header, as he said, absolutely brilliant. You'd have loved it, Matt.
Wow. Another description of that, putting it into the box. When did they score their first goal, did you think, oh, this could be a big score early doors in this?
Yeah, they got 2 ahead quite early in the piece, and I think you kind of thought early on, you were like, yeah, this could get quite unpleasant. And you know, once Welling conceded a couple, their heads went down, and it was a tough one for them. But you just kind of got the feeling, you know, every time they went forward, they looked like scoring in the first half, and that's how they ended up with the 6 goals. You know, I've got in front of me that. They were 3-0 up after 22 minutes, 2-0 up after 11. And, you know, and then they went 22, 26, 28. So, you know, by then the game's over as a contest. And as you say, so many teams get into that position and don't then kick on. But they really did kick on. And I do want to mention as well, I discussed him with Luke Jessop there, but Devontae West, who I'm told is only 17 years of age, but he was exceptional. Really good with the ball at his feet, not short of confidence, and 2 good goals. And I was really impressed with Hollands and Blair, because I think they've got a good mix there of youth and experience. You know, they've got names that you've heard of, but names that you don't know. And I thought they looked very good. And you can look at it and say, well, Welling were poor, which would be a fair comment. But you can only beat what's in front of you. And, you know, you see so many other teams that say score 3 or 4 early on and then shut up shop. They didn't. They went on and on and on. And that's full credit to them, because, you know, as I say, it's easy to just say, right, well, the game's won, let's let up. But actually, do you know what? They just kept on going and they wanted to get that big score.
You mentioned about Hollands and Blair. Do they play at one of the academy grounds? We mentioned Lee Spiller and people like that who do the academy. Is that how it works? Where they play now?
Well, so their ground is at Star Meadow. So if you know Gillingham at all, it's just off the A2. Literally, there's a pub called The Star and it's right behind there. And there is an academy there as well. But they've been there for quite some time. And, you know, that's their home. I remember they had to play away
for a bit. Is it 3G?
It's a 3G. So they had to play away a bit while the pitch was being done. But now they're back home. And as I said to him there, you know, the challenge is there for all to see, because on Saturday, we were a mile away from Priestfield, where there's 11,000 people watching Gillingham against Wrexham, and they've got to do something to get those people to come in and watch them. Scoring 10 goals is only going to help, isn't it?
Yeah, well, absolutely. If they play a good style of football and in a competitive division, with Chatham doing well, Medway's on a bit of a high for non-league football. It shows how difficult it is for some of these clubs to compete with all these sides as well. So, fair play, 10 goals. But I suppose we should talk about Welling, John, as well. So, oh dear.
Absolutely. Yeah, not their finest day, shall we say. As I say, it's always easy to chat to a team after a big win. Data and Pons and Blair, one to forget for Wellington. The chasing defeat came a week or so after it was announced they're moving to K-Sports. As you're about to hear, that is not the only big change going on at the club. Manager slash owner Kevin Oakes has brought in a new coaching team from Kent County League side Ide Hill. One of the new men, assistant boss Bill Reynolds, joined Kevin to discuss the defeat and the plans going forward for the Boots.
Yeah, let's not make any bones about it. We were dreadful. That is one of the most gutless, poor performances I've ever seen. And one of the big things we said before the game, with new people from the management team in and around the club, is that people have got a point to prove today. There's a lot of people in the change room that don't know each other, management and players. Made the right first impression, and unfortunately we didn't. Credit to Holland and Blair, I thought they were very good, a lot better than I've ever seen them, frankly. But we were as terrible as they were good.
When you're 6-0 down at half time, what do you say to the players in the dressing room?
Have some pride and guts, have some personal standards. And I thought we did, maybe for about 10 minutes. And you think to yourself at the time, well, maybe we're a little bit better. But then at the end of the game, you think, well, maybe it's more a case of Holland and Blair taking their foot off the gas. Just a bad day at the office, as you say.
How do you bounce back?
Well, that will be slightly less my responsibility now. A few more people around me, so I think training groundwork. We haven't trained for the last 2 weeks. We are obviously in a transitional period. We need to learn very quickly, but ultimately Tuesday night training is critical. We need everybody turning up with the right attitude. It's difficult to forget days like today, but we must do. We can't feel sorry for ourselves. Today's result is not going to change. We need to get on the training ground, get the new boys integrated, get the new management integrated as quickly as possible, and put on a better show in next week.
So what is happening with the management then?
So Bren, Bill and Luke have joined us as part of the management team. I think one of the reasons, I said in our podcast during the week, I think one of the reasons we are in the situation we are is that we are a small club with not enough volunteers, not enough management people. And that puts a lot of work on my personal shoulders, and I don't want to do everything, but I need good like-minded people around me. I've got more of them now, and they'll roll their sleeves up as much as the players will, and dig in and help collectively pull us out of this shit.
And Bill, for you, I suppose it's hard to watch that from the sidelines.
Yeah, it's an eye-opener today. There's, as Kev said, there's a lot of work to do. Our side, we give it our all. Obviously for us today, it was about as well seeing exactly what we have to work with. Work alongside Kev and Steve is going to be something different for us. We've, as I said, it's an eye opener, and we know exactly what to do. We know where to start, and hopefully, come Tuesday night, we bring it into the game next Saturday.
And what's your background in coming into this?
So yes, I was an assistant manager over at Ide Hill underneath Bren. Been there for about 2 years now. I think we've been there for 18 months. I was obviously in the Kent County before that as well. It's going to be a tough challenge, and I'm looking forward to it.
Of course, changes at Ide Hill because there was no chance of promotion.
There was no drive there, no push. We had everything there on the table to them about, going up the leagues. We didn't want to know. They weren't interested. And we've got, you'll probably see it in the next few weeks. We've got the players around us for this level of football. And we're hoping as well, once we sit down with Kev on Monday night, there'll be a few maybe coming in. Obviously, we'll work with the players that's here as well. And we'll get out of it. I'm sure of it.
I suppose the fact there's only one relegation place, you're desperate not to be that one team, but the fact there is only one does help, because it always gives you something to cling on to, doesn't it?
You've got to be the second worst team in the league. Do you know what I mean? And for the rest of this season, 10, 11 games, whatever it is, we need to stay up. We'll do everything we can to stay up. and then from next season we can push on from there.
I think it's not much of a statement to say you want to be the second worst. I get what you're alluding to, Bill, but I think the situation that we're in now, that is the harsh reality of it. You know, our goal difference is terrible, so in many ways, you know, today shouldn't have a massive influence. You're more likely to get a positive reaction from the ones that are bothered and the ones that are good enough and the ones that want to buy into it, because they're not going to want to be in this situation again. The sulkers and the moaners that, you know, want to jack the towel in, well, you know, they're part of the reason that today, days like today happen, unfortunately. And every club at some point, you know, has been on the end of a good hiding. It's how you come out of it, the other side, that will be a reflection of where we end up playing our football next season.
And obviously, we say where you're playing football next season, physically, that's going to be at K-Sports. You've just signed a 5-year deal there.
What a segue that was.
Thank you very much. It's not my first time. But that's an exciting opportunity. And I've spoken to you before, and you've always just wanted a base, and now you've got somewhere for 5 years.
Yeah, really exciting. We're really, really looking forward to next season, but we want to make sure it's at the highest level of football possible. This club, people that know me and know our club will have heard me say it a million times, but maybe your listeners that maybe cover a larger base won't. You know, we were a Parkside picking up dog mess 6 years ago. Two of those 6 years were cancelled because of COVID. We've had more promotions in our history than seasons. You know, not too sure quite how that's possible. So, you know, the reality of that situation is that you are going to reach a little bit of a temporary glass ceiling where you can't go any further. And that is step five, because there are players at this level that are earning money and play, clubs that are paying out serious money.
Well, the comparison between Faversham and yourselves is like chalk and cheese, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, even if you go to, you know, Deal, for example, the example I always give, you know, they get 500, 600, 700 people every week. They're pulling in thousands and thousands of pounds over the turnstile. They're paying out thousands of pounds, I'm sure, but all credit to them, because, you know, they're paying out what they bring in. Whereas, let's say, 20 years ago they were at Wembley, 20 years ago we didn't exist. So, yeah, being at this level of football, you realise on days like today how far we've come, as well as the horrible bit of getting spanked. But the ambition is in the club to go further, and the move to K-Sports allows us a foundation to build the youth structure. We've inherited some of it, and we're now going to build the rest. It allows us to generate income, which we've never done before. A lot of that has had to come from me personally. It allows us to have a supporter base of, you know, 200-300 people at games, as opposed to one man and his dog. And that will make the club a much better place to do. And more people like Bill and Bren and everybody else around the club that will muck in, so it's not me doing everything. We just really want to make sure that is from a place in the summer at step five and not step six. And, yeah, we need to learn from today and make sure it doesn't happen again.
And I guess the chance to play at K-Sports, lovely facility there, is something that's tempted you to join this revolution?
Yeah, massively. I'm local to there anyway. So
50 yards away.
Yeah, and I run the under-10s and the under-7s down there at the minute. So, it was, you know, it's always interesting, always interesting.
Is it still going to be Welling Town, or are you going to, you know, because you're a long way from Welling at K-Sports, that's the only thing.
Look, I said in an interview the other day, we've never played in Welling. The only time we've ever played in Welling was Erith and Belvedere away. You know, it would be nice to have a ground in Welling. It's not going to happen. Building 20, 30, 40 youth teams from scratch in Welling, which is a catchment area completely and utterly saturated by, you know, Welling, Erith, Cray Valley, Erith Town, all these other clubs. There's too many clubs in our catchment area. Inheriting a large amount of K-Sports youth teams has given us a massive head start, rather than build it from scratch. Yes, of course, the ambition in 5, 10, 15 years' time would be to have Welling Town playing at Welling. But this is the best option on the table at the moment. It's a really exciting one. Off the field. Off the field, the club has never been in a better place. On the field at the moment, it's in a poor place. But we've got the right people around us to get us out of it. And those that want to help us get there will back them 100% over the next 11 games.
As I just said, Matt, I don't really like speaking to managers after any defeat, but that one was tough for Kevin to take. But do you know what? He was very honest, wasn't he?
It was, and a fair play for him to fronting up from that. Clearly, he's got a job in his hands, struggling.
I guess
at the
he's
end
hoping
the
that's the low point.
Well, obviously, well, they got this weekend. I presume, you know, he had this big training session this week, how he'd get players in. I presume it'd be interesting to see how many of the players who started on Saturday are playing this weekend. You know, 91 goals conceded in 30 games is his own issue. It is difficult for them. But clearly, there is a bigger picture in this equation. And as you said before, the key thing is they stay in this division and move into K Sports. I take it they'll still be under the guise of, he mentioned about that, they'll still be under the name of Wellington.
It looks like it. Yeah, I mean, I did ask that question and there wasn't really a direct answer to it, but I got the impression that yes, you know, and as he said, you know, in years to come, he'd love to get back to Welling because they've never actually played in Welling. And, you know, Welling is his base and that's where he wants the team to be based. But, you know, I think it's exciting to have brought in Bill and Bren, the guys from Ide Hill, because Ide Hill were obviously playing at Tunbridge Angels. And then a couple of weeks ago, and we'll talk about the Welling thing later on, but a couple of weeks ago, it was announced that they would be leaving Tunbridge Angels, and then that the management team had resigned because there was no sort of chance of being promoted, and there'd been talks like that. And that's exactly what Bill said there. You know, he said there was no drive to go forward and go to the next level. And, you know, fair play to Kevin for going out there and saying to these guys, come on, I can help you get to the levels that you want to get to. And good ambition from them and a real opportunity for a fresh start for Wellington, I suppose.
Yeah, I presume, were they bringing a lot of players in from Ide Hill now? I presume
that was the impression that I got from that interview.
And that's
there.
That's a couple of leagues up, so let's be interested in seeing how those players get in. But clearly, they're confident in their abilities, the new manager coming in, what he can achieve. Again, the only, you know, if you win 10-1, anyway, it's sort of technically down in the next game. But for Welling, it clearly can't get any worse unless they concede even more. But they've got a chance now. Looking at the squad, staying up, absolutely crucial. And then the foundations for the next 5 years to go.
Yeah, I think it's all about personal pride, isn't it? And I guess from that, you can say that you didn't think there was a lot of pride on show on Saturday. But people will not want to be on the end of that again because, you know, it was pretty miserable for them.
And, were they arguing amongst themselves by the end, or was it you could see the body language?
No, I think they were just kind of resigned to it. And, you know, it is hard for Wellington because, as he says there, you know, they've come from nothing at all, so they don't have a big fan base behind them, they don't have anything like that, and they've almost had to kind of run before they can walk at what was the season, the thing you said, we've had more promotions than we've had seasons, and you know they found themselves at a level that is tough to compete at, especially you look at some of the teams that they come up against, you know, your Favershams and your Whitstables and Deal and things like that. You know, there's some big budgets floating around in this league, and Wellington don't have that. You know, effectively they're a one-man band, and Kevin's done a great job there, you know, and he should be really proud of what he's done. And I hope for him that the move that he's sorted out and then bringing in these guys is going to be the start of a positive move forward for Wellington.
Well, I think it has to be. Clearly, the plan is 5 years at K-Sports, have that background, have a stability, work with the youth system as well. Clearly, Ide Hill must have a little bit of knowledge of the players, and we'll be interested to see how they get on. Absolutely crucial, they're only 2 points off the drop, and so they know only one going down, it's going to be a bit of a challenge, but maybe these new players, I'll be interested to see how these new players, from Ide Hill, I presume that's two levels below, is it?
Yeah.
Probably. How those players cope with the scaffold, so be interesting to see. I'd love to work out, John, we'll have to work out next week, how many changes they make this weekend.
Absolutely. But, you know, fair play again to Kevin for talking to me there, because, do you know what, I had to wait ages for him to come back down. They had quite the post-mortem on the pitch, just him and the management team. And I was like, and I've never met Kevin before. And then he kind of walked past me. And I was like, Kevin, you know who I am, don't you? And he went, hello, John. And I was like, he said, do you want to have a chat? I was like, yeah. You know, it's just like, it was really awkward. You know, you don't want the first time you meet someone to be that kind of, oh, by the way, you've just lost 10-1 and that's got to be my first question. So, you know, fair fair play to him for talking so well, you know, and I hope that, you know, well, I don't want any of those teams in the bottom of that league to go down because, you know, they're all good clubs, all well-run clubs. But, you know, I just wish them all the best for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Again, I'll be looking more into their results now and see how they get on, I think, after that result, after seeing them lose 10. And well done. One for your list, mate. Bucket list, Dave. Seen a side score 10. I'm trying to work out.
I was going to say, have you ever seen 10?
I think the highest I've probably seen is 7, I think. Yeah, so I've seen a couple of 7s, but never seen it higher than that. So
I've definitely seen an 8, which it was Ramsgate against Peacehaven and Telscombe back in the day. I think that was, I looked it up before we came on. I think that was 2016, yeah. Finished 8-1, I think that one was. But no, never seen a 10 before. And you know, as horrible as it is for Welling Town, and I don't mind admitting this, when it was 9, I was desperate for him to get 10. Because I was like, you know what, I want to see it now. Now we've got this close. Don't take this away from me. But yeah, so we are one on the bucket list. And unless, Matt, it's Deal Town scoring 10 to win the FA Vars this year, I don't ever want to see 10 again. I've done it now. That's fine. There were plenty of goals elsewhere in the scaffold on Saturday, with leaders Glebe held to a 1-1 draw at Whitstable. But those in the chasing pack who did play kept the pressure on. Corinthian beat Tunbridge Wells 3-1. A 4-0 win for Ira Town over fellow playoff hopefuls Beersted. And Faversham beaten Sutton Athletic 5-1. Lidtown 3-1 winners at Fisher. Lordswell beat Rostall 1-0. It was Stansfield 2, Kennington 0, and Snodden 6-2 winners over Holmesdale. Deal's home game with Punjab was called off an hour or so before kickoff after a torrential downpour. We managed to completely avoid that where I was, Matt, but I understand it just absolutely, the heavens opened down down your end of the county.
Yeah, on the way up to Dartford, it absolutely chucked it down on Saturday. So, yeah, I think Folkestone were off and Deal were off, weren't they? So, yeah. I think it was down too much in Thanet, but yeah, it was pretty bad weather. So, yeah. Again, as you would expect, I think bad weather's coming again, so we might see some more games coming up.
See another game into Deal's packed fixture schedule as well, that one on Saturday. Punjab 3-2 winners over BCD on Tuesday night, with Lidtown 1-0 victors at Rostall. We also know the identity of the two Scaffold Challenge Cup finalists as well after Tuesday night. It will be Corinthian against Irith Town after they both booked their spots in the final. Corinthian 5-2 winners on aggregate over Division 1 leaders AFC Whiteleaf, while Irith Town won 4-2 on the night to squeeze past Deal 5-4 on aggregate. The final will be played on Good Friday, a venue to be confirmed. Now, that final always used to be at the back end of the season. I think it was always May Bank Holiday. But because of the playoffs, we've got a Good Friday treat coming our way. Fixtures in that
division. You see one of the goals as well from Corinthian, the free kick.
Absolutely brilliant, yeah. What a hit that is. And the poor keeper. Did you see the keeper on Twitter? He said, did I do anything wrong here? Because I was expecting it to go the other side. But yeah, some hit from Jamie Billings. Definitely, Matt, let me promise you, the second best kick in that game last night. I'll tell you that one off the air as well. On Saturday, it's Beersted against Sutton Athletic, Holmesdale against Faversham Town, Kennington against Corinthian, it's Lordswell against Glebe, Lid take on Punjab, it's Rostall against Hollands and Blair, Stansfield host Irith Town, Snodden against Tunbridge Wells, BC Athletic against Deal Town, and Welling Town at home to Whitstable. Could be an interesting one, that one, but we'll see how the new look Welling side goes. Tuesday night, Kennington against Deal. It's Irith Town against Fisher, Stansfield against Faversham, and Tunbridge Wells against Sutton Athletic. Poor on Wednesday, Lid Town against Corinthian, and more tough games for Welling Town as they go to Snodland. In the First Division, leaders AFC Whiteleaf beat Forest Hill Park 3-0. Canterbury 3-1 winners over Lewisham Borough. Rochester had a 4-0 win at Greenways. Meridian VP beat SC Thamesmead 3-1. Tooting Bet beat Croydon 2-0. While a game between Stabless Monarchs and Larkford New Hythe was abandoned with the hosts a goal to the good. I'm assuming that was weather-related, as I've not been able to find out any other reason. This weekend, AFC Whiteleaf against K-Sports. It's Croydon against Rochester United. Faversham Strike Force take on Canterbury City. It's FC Umstead against Greenways. Forest Hill Park against Larkford and New Hythe. Meridian VP against Stapless Monarchs. SC Thamesmead against Bride and Ropes. And Tuesday night, Canterbury at home to K-Sports. And then on Wednesday, Faversham Strike Force against Stapless Monarchs. FC Umstead against Forest Hill Park. And Lewisham Borough against Croydon. In the Eastman League South East, none of the top three were in action as the rain continued. But in the games that did survive, we only had one winner. Ashford were our only weekend winners, beating Horndean by 3-1. But Irith and Belvedere and Herne Bay shared a 1-1 draw. Phoenix Sports drew 2-2 with Burgess Hill. But there were 1-0 defeats for both Sevenoaks and Sheppey United at Chichester and at home to Merston, respectively. Hythe were our only team in action on Tuesday night, and they beat Littlehampton by 2-0. This weekend, it's Burgess Hill against Sheppey United. Cray Valley at home to Three Bridges. Herne Bay against Hythe. Phoenix Sports go to Horndean. Beckenham go to Lancing. Erith and Belvedere are also on the road. They go to Littlehampton. It's Ramsgate against Ashford, Seven Oaks against Broadridge Heath, and Sittingbourne against East Grinstead. But on Tuesday night, both of the top two are in action. Ramsgate at East Grinstead, Cray Valley at Hythe, and also Ashford against Ashford go to Horndene, what, 10 days after they played in the first opportunity. But yeah, nothing going on at the top of that league this week, Matt, but it's still very tight there, isn't it? And this could be every week now could be pivotal. Two tough games for both of our sides at the top of the table this week.
Yeah, if the games are going to be on, very, very tight. I suppose Cray have got the upper hand at the moment. And Three Bridges on the cusp of the playoff. Noel Leighton playing for them. He's got a lot of goals from a Margate striker. Was close. Well, a team was after him. There you go.
It's all over for them, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ramsgate against Ashford, yeah. Again, I don't know if Ramsgate could have had that little dodgy little spell. I know they won late on in the previous game. Ashford, I'm sure Kevin Watson will be. He has the Indian sign over Ben Smith after that when Cray got to Wembley. So, yeah, it should be a good game, that Ramsgate against Ashford, I would have thought. Big game. Again, I still fancy Sittingbourne to get into it, but against East Grinstead, you'd fancy them as well. But we're thinking three victories there. Going to go to the wildest league. So, and again, Hyde got games in hand. Can they get up there? Well, they've got a lot of games to play, but they continue to win. So, yeah, interesting times. Can't call it at the moment, John.
It's a tough one to call, isn't it? In the Eastern League Premier Division, where those teams are obviously hoping to be next season, 9 goals and another bumper crowd for Chatham on Saturday as they beat playoff rivals Billericay 6-3. Cray Wanderers continue their excellent home form with a 1-0 win over Kingstonia. I'm pretty sure I read that's a record unbeaten home run for the Wanderers at the moment, so well done to them, setting them up perfectly for their move in the summer to their own stadium. But Margate lost out with the same score at Haringey. Folkestone drew 0-0 with Potters Bar on Tuesday night, while Cray were losing 2-0. At Whitehawk this weekend, Chatham go to Carshalton, Folkestone are at Cheshunt, and Cray Wanderers are at the leaders Hornchurch, while Margate are at home to Horsham. Folkestone's game on Saturday, as Matt has already said, was another to fall foul to the weather. And that ties in nicely with our next interview. After our chat with Ryan Maxwell after Sittingbourne's late call-off last week, Matt suggested that more money should be invested to help teams get 3G pitches. But friend of the show, Jay Burkow, was very quick to point out that investing in grass pitches is also a sensible move. And with Matt heading to Prince's Park on Saturday, he was able to catch up with the Dartford groundsman to delve deeper into that issue a little more.
Well, we don't. I mean, I've not actually looked properly really into what we can get here. Because we are coming under the elite bracket, it's harder to get funding. But with your sort of grassroots, I know you said about 3Gs. Now, I said before when I come on that if you're looking for a 3G to make income, then that's end of story, that's fair enough. But if you're looking at it to get games on, then why not invest that some of that money into a pitch? So if you can get more funding as well, so maybe the FA can match what you're putting in, and you can go and buy yourself a vertidrain machine, or you can get yourself some drainage put into the pitch, or some education's key. Get some education. There's a lot of volunteers out there who do a great job, but they're not educated in how to properly look after and maintain a pitch. People just think you turn up, cut, mark, and that's it. There's a lot more into it that you can do to improve your surfaces and to help with your drainage and your infiltration rates.
How much work? I know you. How many games you've done this season, Don, is?
Over 50 now. Over 50.
And there's a few more, 20 probably more to go before the end of the season, is there? Is that too?
Yeah, I think we've got 7 or 8 now with a Maidstone game. 8 first-team games, 2 Cheltenham games and 2 London City, and potentially 3 Dartford Women's games.
So, again, this week's been pretty much rainy. The surface an hour or so before kick-off, it looks pretty good. A lot of games in the area have gone. How much work has it gone on to get this game on again?
Right, it goes back to, again, so education. So we looked at the weather forecast. They've got the boys from Jordan's in on Tuesday to vertidrain the pitch, open the pitch.
Vertidrain, what does that mean?
So it's a big machine on the back of a tractor that puts loads of holes in the pitch, about 7 inches deep, all the way across the pitch, just to help the water get from the top surface down to the drainage to get rid of the water quicker. So if you've got a compacted surface because you've had a lot of games or for whatever reason, the water struggles to get through that top layer of the soil to get to the drains. So it's irrelevant having the drains. If you can keep the top soil open with a vertidrain machine, you can get the water away from the top.
Is that expensive, that vertidrain machine?
Well, again, you don't have to. Yeah, they are. To buy one, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head how much. They're not cheap, but a company like I work for, Jordan's, you're looking at about £500 for them to come in and do it for you. So if there's a bit of money, so the FA done a deal with a contract firm and said, in our league, Saudi Ishmael League, we will match half of what it costs for 5 vertebrae for each club that's got grass a year. So that's £250 for each club I've got to come up with 4 times a year. And that will, I'm pretty certain, will save a lot of games. Just because you're opening the surface up, decompacting the top layer, and the water's getting through. Goes back again to education. If your groundsman's thinking ahead, right, I now know that my surface is compact. A lot of teams in that league will cut and won't collect grass clippings, for instance. If you get a build-up of thatch from dead grass on your top of your pitch, that's going to slow the drainage rates as well, because the water's then got to get through that all that material. So again, if he's thinking ahead, right, verticutting in the right times of year to clean that out. Right, I've got a busy schedule of games. I've got 8 games this month. After the 3rd or 4th game, I'll get the vertidrainer on. I know it's coming in wet. I'll book Ian to come in and vertidrain, say. Then if I get any rain, I know I'm not going to have a problem. It's not going to get wet on top. It's not going to hold. And then it's a cycle. So you can get caught in a cycle of the pitch is getting wet. It's getting battered because it's just about playable. And then you lose a lot of grass coverage. Then it's going to hold more water. Then you get it more compaction because you're battering the surface. Just little things, educating people in how to look after the playing surfaces a little bit better and to keep that top layer open will help a lot with getting games on and ultimately having a better playing surface for the players to play on.
So a lot of it is again, investment from the clubs themselves. That, you know, you have 5 games off a year, that costs you a fortune. People might not come on a Tuesday, etc. like that. So it's a circle that clubs have got to get back into.
Well, this is it, yeah. I mean, I can't speak for every club. I'm very lucky here with Dartford and Jordans at what we've got. But there's a lot of clubs out there probably don't think as much about the pitch they should do. They just see it as an income stream. Oh, it is there. Well, how about you invest a little bit more and you'll get a return, because you won't have them a Saturday game called off. Then you're playing on Tuesday night. You're not going to get as many supporters. You're not getting as much money through the bar. That £500... for Ian to come in and vertidrain once every 2 or 3 months, you've got to get back straight away if your games are on.
Again, you're pleased with the surface, how it's holding up this season as well?
You know me, mate, I'm never pleased, but I'm happy. We took a battering this month. February's been a horrible month for every groundsman out there. A lot of games. We had a London City game on the weekend that played in the rain. We got it on, but it took a bit of damage. I'm glad it weren't the men's side, to be honest. But yeah, ultimately, it's flat, it's firm, it's true. It's a bit like me, a bit thin on top, but we're getting there, mate. We're nearly there.
He's very passionate about the use of grass pitches there, and he's definitely right. If the only reason you want a 3G pitch is to stop games being called off, then that's not the way to do it, is it?
No, absolutely. And he was rightly right to pick me up on that, because, again, football can be played on it. If you're a club who wants to make money, etc. like that, 3G, and you can afford to do it as well. But if you do invest in the grass, be it either yourself or with, if you could get some sort of money from an association or a football league or whatever, or the FA, it makes sense, because I know a lot of people don't like playing on 3G. Players don't like it. It affects their knees, etc. like that. You'd rather play on a better surface. And because if the surfaces were better, more games would be on, and football would be the overall winner on this. So it's an interesting one, because I presume a lot of clubs down the community route. Dartford, I probably have to play more games than anybody else on their surface, because it's a decent service. And as he says, they invest money into it and get the benefits from that. So it's a situation, I think, 3G is a way for one club, but if you've got another club who can work on your pitch, you can feel the benefits of that as well.
I think that's the thing, because, you know, we know about the cost of a 3G pitch and you know, that it needs replacing after a certain while. But it is almost the easy solution to say, oh, yeah, we'll just chuck a 3G down. But if you are prepared to invest that money in a grass pitch, and from what he's saying there, it's not a prohibitive cost to get that pitch looked after well over the course of a winter. You know, and there are companies out there in the county that will come and look after your grass pitch. And I think maybe sometimes you would look at it and say that it's kind of the easy way out. It's one of the things that it's probably easy to not want to spend your money on. But actually, if you're prepared to put that little bit in, then you reap the benefits. Because as he said there, and as we all know, if you play a game on a Saturday, you're going to get more people coming, you're going to get more money in the bar, more gate receipts, you're going to get more burgers sold, more programs sold. So it's a no-brainer to want to play on a Saturday. And if it is that easy to keep and maintain a grass pitch to a high standard, because, you know, Dartford's pitch, that pitch gets used. You know, it's not like they're just, you know, they're only using it on a Saturday, and it's like Wembley Stadium, and, you know, like a only reeled out for special occasions. There's a lot of teams playing on that pitch, and the pitch holds up. So that just goes to show that if you are willing to invest in it, you will reap the benefits.
Yeah, I think that's the way. 3G, again, 3G has its place. And again, interesting to see if in the Football League hasn't really thought about putting it in, and there must be a reasoning for that. So I take his understanding. If you're going to use it to use you as a community hub, maybe 3G if you can afford it. But otherwise, if you can, make sure you've got a decent groundsman who works on the pitch, you can feel the benefits completely. So I fully understand. And hopefully the FA can look into this situation and help clubs out with the pitch as well on that basis. So I'm sure there's a wider talk about that, what we can do.
I suppose the other thing to ask really is, how did the pitch look at Dartford on Saturday?
Perfectly. It's always good, a good surface. So all the rain that he had, he went 300 millimetres, should be. Unfortunately, they're not putting too much quality on the pitch from what I've seen the last few times with Dartford, but the surface stood up no problem at all. And you wouldn't have known that the constant rain you had, there's no bubbles or anything like that. I don't think either manager would have any criticism of the surface there at all.
On that pitch, the Darts were held to a 1-1 draw by Taunton on Saturday for a 2-1 loss to Avely on Tuesday night. They are firmly in the relegation battle. Dover lost 2-1 at Chippenham Saturday. Matt, I've got some really bad news for you. Are you ready?
Yep.
Mathematically, you can't get in the playoffs.
Disappointing.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's hard to hear that. It must have come as a shock to you. But your promotion dreams are over.
Have you worked out when we're going to get relegated yet?
As if I've looked at that, Matt. It's not long, is it?
No.
But yeah, I hate to say this, and you know, people, listeners, that we like to be positive, but I can unequivocally say Dover Athletic will not be playing in the National League next season. And I'm sorry to have to break that news to you, Matt, at the end of February. Tunbridge Angels lost 2-1 at home to Slough. Welling grabbed a point at St Albans on Saturday, but then moved out of the drop zone with a 3-2 win over fellow strugglers Truro on Tuesday night. That's a massive result for Welling. And just being above that line has got to be a huge psychological boost, hasn't it?
Fantastic. Clearly, Rod Stringer, he's brought in a lot of players. Sonny Fisher's come in, good player, knows where the back of the net is, working hard. We saw the back end of maybe on the Danny Bloor that they had a bit of fight in that. And again, probably no coincidence, Joel Law's got in there. And we know what he's like, being a leader, being organised, getting them hard to beat. And now they've got a goal threat. And going back about Dartford, having seen them a few times, I know they beat Dover, but I think draw would have been a fair result. They haven't got a goal scorer. And they've got real issues there. From a Welling perspective, Danny Bloor had gone. Rod Stringer clearly lined up because he was taking it the next day. Dartford sacked Alan Dowson, probably 10th of January, something like that. Quite close after Maidstone won in the third round of the FA Cup, wouldn't it? So, and they've had a plan. We've got the manager in and it's worked wonders. Where's the plan at Dartford? Dartford have normally been a very well-organised club. They took their time with getting Steve King in as a manager. And Alan Dowson came in, and I know they had a number of interviews before he took the job. So they know managers are out there. Just from a Dartford point of view, there's nothing in that team to get you excited, which is a concern, I would say, and they need to find a goal scorer. And do they start thinking about it? Right, we need to get a new manager in and see if you get that mythical or that so-called new manager bounce, because they need to sort that out. Otherwise, they've got big problems.
And I guess if they'd beaten Taunton on Saturday, that would have been a huge result, wouldn't it? Because it would have, you know, it was the old cliche, but it was a six-pointer, because it would have pushed Taunton even further into it and move them up, and also giving them some confidence. But I worry, and you know, when you were going through that then, I thought, do you know what, he's absolutely right. We've always held Dartford up as being so well run, such a well-organised club. And you know, they finished second last season, let's not forget.
Yeah.
You know, that they've been in and around, and it's just all gone wrong. And I just I'm baffled by it all, because they're well supported. They've got, you know, everything's in place for that club to be a success. And yet here we are, and they are in danger of being sucked into a relegation battle and heading towards the Isthmian League here. And that would be a disaster for Dartford.
But again, they've always been, when they had the new ground, like Maidstone, always going in an upright direction. Been solid in this level for years, that couple of seasons out in the National League. They've got to, Tony Berman, nice guy, clearly, you know, He's brought in his own players. They're missing strikers. He's let a couple of strikers go, hasn't really replaced them. But they need to. There's nothing. Luke Coulson, good player, you know. But again, there's nothing to run at the shot. They've got a couple of good strikers. Romain, who's coming, Ibi Akambi. Good strikers, but they're not goal scorers. They've got to find a goal scorer from somewhere. Otherwise, they're going down. My only thinking is that they've got a manager lined up and he's at another club and he doesn't want to go just yet. That's what I'm thinking. Otherwise, you know, Tony Berman knows what he's doing, or they've got a manager lined up who will go in the summer, maybe something like that. So,
but I think if you were a Dartford fan and that was the case, wouldn't you want to know? Wouldn't you want them to come out and say, right, Tony Berman is going to be in charge for the rest of the season?
Yeah.
Because they've not even done that yet. And you know, I know when you've spoken to him in the past, you've kind of put that question to him and he said, well, I've got nothing really to say on it. And you know, if I was a Dartford fan, I would want to just know. And also the players, you know, they must want to know, right, this is the gaffer for the rest of the season. Let's give our all for him. But at the moment, when he's still up in the air, I don't know how you'd feel about that.
Yeah. Again, I listened to his club interview today as well, and he's sort of not skating around the subject. There's plenty of managers who are out there, and I'm sure would take the Dartford job. Maybe it's a compensation issue, or they want somebody and they can't get hold of him at the moment. And Tony Berman's, and he's admitted, it just hasn't worked out under him as well at the moment. So they've got to make a decision sooner rather than later. Either way, we're keeping him or we're not. Keeping with me, or we're going to go elsewhere. Interesting to see what they can do. But again, at the moment, on points per game, Dartford will be relegated at the end of the season.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the concern. Teams win all their games. It's not going to happen. But at the moment, they will be going down, which would be no shock that Dover would be relegated this season or struggle this season. But if you'd have told me Dartford in the beginning of March could go down, I'd have laughed at you in the face.
Yeah, talking of Welling United as we were, it seems they're not moving to Tunbridge Angels after all. All that fuss we gave them last week, Matt.
Oh, massive, mate.
I got a text from Nigel the day after saying, oh, we might be staying put. And then Tunbridge Angels advertising that they want someone to ground share next season. So I would suggest that maybe it looks like Welling United's ground plans are certainly on pause at the very least, Matt.
Yeah, I think I'm led to believe that, A, because of the ground development's not going to be done maybe this year or starting this year or planning permission in this year, that they will, that's not going to happen. So another year at Parkview Road, which I think with the upturn in form and the discontent the supporters have done, and also the Erith factor, who've been very vocal about staying, close with there. Maybe this has been a bit of a PR gaffe a little bit from Welling and their owners and saying we're going this, we need to move out without the plans in, and power of the supporters, they're not happy and they've listened to them, and maybe another year at Parkview Road, so which is good, because when I went away the game against Barnet in the trophy, I thought, oh, maybe this is the last time I'll be at Parkview Road for a while. But good to see that. So it's been a good week for Welling United supporters. I think the results have been good. And also they know they don't have to travel to Tunbridge Angels. So, yeah, and I'm led to believe they will not be ground shedding next season.
Yes, anyway,
should be playing Parkview Road.
They're at home to Braintree on Saturday and then go to Farnborough on Tuesday. While Dartford host managers Worthing, Tunbridge Angels are at home to Eastbourne. Maidstone come back to earth from their FA Cup exploits with a trip to Crabble. And the Stones are at home to Bath on Tuesday. And talking of Maidstone United, it's time we heard from Nick and Kian Morgan and their second big day out, this time at Coventry. Over to you, boys.
Hi, Matt and John. This is Nick Morgan, one half of the Kent Non-League podcast's roving reporters for Maidstone United, starting our coverage of the fifth round. Still feels weird saying that, but the fifth round of the FA Cup, where we are going to be heading up to Coventry today at around sort of lunchtime or so. So the other half of the duo is currently in school. I'm about to head into work, so I've got a half a day's work to do, and I'm just sort of gathering my thoughts, ready to kind of get us prepped for the journey for starters, and then trying to figure out how I'm actually going to get through this evening's game, because it's, I mean, the media attention this time around has been even more crazy than last time. I mean, I've started to see things from Friday, various different news reports, you know, BBC has been featured, ITV, the lot. And then I get a sort of a message, and it turns out that we're going to be part of it as well. So the day's already got off to this really weird start, that my face has been plastered, and Kian's, in fairness as well, has been plastered all over Good Morning Britain. And all because our team from the sixth tier is going to be playing against Coventry. And it's, you know, teams like ours, they really need that kind of exposure. So it's absolutely amazing just that we're this constant sort of, you know, impetus, and just generally lots of people that are interested in seeing our Maidstone get on. And I've seen so many messages of support. The whole town's buzzing from the whole thing. I mean, we've sold 4,800 tickets. So it's, as I said last time, I think there's lots of positives to come from this. I suppose it's the how's the game actually going to go? And I think I said last time that I just want us to score a goal, and that's exactly the same this time. Because I've got a sneaking suspicion this one's going to be even harder than the last. Coventry are kind of one of those teams, A, that are just, you know, well established, really good, effective team. Missed out on promotion last year, I think it was. This year, in and around the playoffs, they've got a lot of sort of well-known names. I mean, Matt Godden, who probably needs to get a little bit of revenge following the Ebbsfleet playoff final that we beat them on. But that aside, they're kind of, for them to have a decent FA Cup run, I don't think would be a bad thing at all. I think the other thing is they've obviously learned from what happened to Ipswich, and they're going to be making sure that doesn't happen to them this time as well. So it's going to be really hard, and it was going to be hard last time. But here goes the magic. It was really hard last time, and we still managed to get a result.
We have now landed, and why are we up here?
Our little team play this big championship side, and I think my dad said this when we played Ipswich. If we score one goal, we're happy.
Yeah. What? So the problem that we've got is that you've just seen from the motorway just how big Coventry Stadium is, haven't you?
Yes.
It's a bit big, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what do you think about the idea of watching our little team playing in a place like that?
I think it's incredible for a club, but also I might be feeling during that. Yeah. Imagine this being Maidstone Stadium.
Yeah, it's going to be a long time before we're going to be playing in places like this for regularly. We haven't even got into there yet. So we're in the hotel room. We've just landed in the hotel because we're staying overnight. And we're getting ready to sort of head down, and we'll go to start to take in the atmosphere and stuff like that. Something else happened yesterday, though. What happened?
We were on TV. The Morgans were on TV. It was my uncle's birthday. He was turning 25, and the whole Morgan family came round my grandma's house, and we were on TV, and I was in it the most.
Yeah. It doesn't normally happen that we get people coming around our house when we're playing people like Taunton and Yeovil and stuff like that, is it? It's a bit funny that there's lots of people that all of a sudden want to talk to us and just find out how we're getting on and what our feelings are about Maidstone. It's a bit funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
How do you think the boys are going to do?
I think they're going to put as much effort in as they can, because we've had the Saturday off, we had the Tuesday off, and then we could get our fitness up.
What do you think the score might be today?
I'm thinking 2-1 them or 2-1 us.
And what's the thing you're most looking forward to?
Sam Corn scoring a belter.
I mean, we've just walked in and there's been a lot of noise downstairs, isn't there? And that's the same as what we experienced at Portman Road. And let's be honest, the opposition team didn't really know what to expect, did they? And when we started to make lots of noise, I think that's when things started to go in our favour, didn't it?
Yeah, so all we've got to do today is make some noise, make those Coventry fans quiet, make those Coventry people, Coventry fans and all of the Coventry players feel quiet so they can't speak, and then we'll go on from there.
So, are you still feeling confident about today?
Yep, we're going to win
10-0. That's just because that's what your brother said, and he's only 4 years old. I don't think it's going to be 10-0, mate, but what an impressive place this is. I mean, it's barely full at the moment. There's not really many people here. George and Craig Fagan have already come out to come and say hello.
No, that's a lie. There is lots of Stones people here.
There are a lot of Stones people here. You're right. They're all downstairs. They're all sort of getting in the spirit of the thing and just generally taking it all in. So it's, still absolutely crazy that we are coming to watch Maidstone United in a place like this. As the Stones team's coming over to get a final clap, they've got to come a long old way around to get this. But the stand, this far end of the ground here, it's just full of Maidstone fans. We've filled out the entire area. It's crazy. There's a drone in the sky. We're just not used to this stuff in non-league. It's absolutely madness. But here the boys come. George is the last one getting a final clap as he goes round. The noise in this place, genuinely, I think that this lot are going to learn what a non-league supporting crowd is like, genuinely. George is really trying to G everyone up. We're going to get as much noise as we can possibly get going in this place. I really think we're going to need a lot of luck and a lot of help today. Here come the teams. What a noise in this place. They haven't got any fire like Portman Road do, though. There's actually a surprising amount of Coventry fans here today. I didn't think they'd maybe quite get as many in here as they have done. It does seem the Prawn Sandwich Brigade don't seem to have bothered to turn up, but otherwise, the rows closest to us, or the areas closest to us, they've got a lot of people and they're very loud. Bit different to Portman Road. It is all getting a little bit real again now. What do you think, Ian?
I can't count the people, but I'm guessing there's about 1 million people here.
Right, I think the first one's just gone in. We're only about 7 or 8 minutes in. And unfortunately, Coventry have scored first. But listen to this. Two-nil, and I think we're only about 12 minutes in. In fairness to Coventry, they're doing what Ipswich should have done, which is just, playing the ball on the floor. I mean, the crowd's still loud, but yeah, I unfortunately was half expecting this, but still, it's 2-0 at the moment. Let's see what happens. So that's the third one that's just gone in, and we just kept just kept napping again. I mean, I don't even think that it's Maidstone not playing to their capability. They're just, Coventry are just playing this as if they would do a league game. It's just the difference in class compared to Ipswich is incredible. The fourth one's just gone in, Kian. How are you feeling?
Nothing.
Because it's a great day out at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got money out of it, but the most best thing is we need to score. We need to score.
Just to make it the best day ever, yeah? One goal. That's all we want.
Yes, one goal.
The next
4 or 5 minutes, maybe.
Okay, Kian. So we have just got back to the car. There's a lot of disappointment in the camp, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of upset. I know that you're very, very upset. But is there anything that you think you're going to take from what the boys achieved in this yes. FA Cup run?
Yes. Having fun. There's a nice old bloke behind us shouting, like, "Bay Stone, just have fun."
Just that. And that's all it's about, because it's only football, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's just the thing that we love.
I can't believe I just said that, but that's what your mum keeps telling us, isn't it? That it is only football. I think what we've got to remember is that the Ipswich game was a bit of a one in a million. It's never really good. It's not always going to happen in that way, is it? So I think that we need to enjoy what we've achieved, enjoy the experience, and, you know, realise that these types of situations don't come on along all the time. But hope that maybe now the boys can start to put that kind of energy into the league, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Are you proud of the boys
yes.
and George and everyone at the club?
Yes.
Because they've had a lot of stuff to deal with, haven't they? And I think that's the only thing really we can
take. I think, even though our FA Cup run's over, guess what?
What?
Next FA Cup, we're going to get through to the final and we're going to play Liverpool and beat them 8,000-0.
I think that's the late night talking, isn't it? Do you know what? Let's end on that. Let's end on hope, and that next year we'll go
We're gonna beat Liverpool 8,000-0. Come on, Stones!
All right, this is Nick and Kia Morgan signing out for the Kent Non-League podcast. Come on, you Stones!
Come on, you Stones!
Well, a 5-0 defeat in the end, Matt. But as I said on Twitter on Monday night, they've done themselves, our county and the whole of non-league proud, haven't they?
Fantastic. The noise they made from watching some of the game on Monday night. Supporters had a great day. Again, it might happen again next season, but from a Maidstone United point of view, you're probably highly unlikely to see your side in the fifth round of the FA Cup. So, and they made the most of it. I think Maidstone have come out of this really, really well as a club on and off the pitch. George Adekobi, clearly a star in the making and what he does, and a manager that probably could go higher. Other clubs will look at it from this and what he can galvanise, either how he can galvanise a club, which was down in the dumps in August. When they started this cup run, I think they just lost it over somebody in the league. And we were probably saying, we might have even said on the pod, if they lose that, he could be out of a job. Fast forward it. And if I'd have said to you, when Maidstone played Dover at Crabble, it'd be the first game since they went out of the FA Cup. You'd be absolutely shocked about it. But great, great achievement. Hope, again, they said they've made life-changing money. Probably haven't, but it's done enough for the coffers to keep them going for a new 3G service next year. And hopefully that of those 5,000 supporters, you know, probably 2,000 of them go every week. If they can get 10% of the other 3,000, 20% going every week, it can only do better for the club. And fair play to Oliver Ash, really great done. And George Adekobi, who's galvanised that and made Maidstone United front page news. And I'm absolutely delighted for the supporters I know, because Maidstone are a really well-run, proper football club, and it's great to see.
Yeah, and I think Nick hit the nail on the head there when he said, you know, Coventry have done what Ipswich should have done, and you know what, that they got a goal early, and unfortunately, it's horrible to say, once they scored, it looked like it was going to be game over, and Coventry were just good, and the quarterfinal draw's been made this evening. I don't think they'd have been jumping for joy to reach the quarterfinals and had either Wolves or Brighton away, but that is the way of the world. But yeah, as I say, a fantastic cup run. It's put Maidstone on the map, and you know, people have been talking about it, and just incredible. And thanks again to Nick and Kian. Sorry that you didn't get the result this time, but you know, absolutely fair play to you both. And you know, it's been memories that will last a lifetime. And I hope that when young Kian's got grandkids, he'll be able to say to them, I saw us play at Coventry in the fifth round of the FA. And he may even reel out this episode of this podcast and say, look, this is me when I was seven, you know, and you know, great moments and moments to treasure. And I hope everybody.
I think just the memories that Maidstone fans could make out of that. Brilliant. Absolutely. I'm hoping it will be one of our other sides next season to get to the fifth round of the FA Cup. But yeah, unbelievable. The memories that I was lucky to see them beat Barrow and Stevenage. So, and again, the delights on people's faces there. And I'm sure those people absolutely loved it against on Monday against Coventry. Back to, unfortunately, not to the Ricoh Arena. Cravel on Saturday. If that doesn't bring you down to earth with a bump, I don't know what will.
No, I mean, that literally is after the Lord Mayor's show, isn't it? that should be in the picture dictionary, or just say after the Lord Mayor's show, a picture of the Ricoh Arena Monday, Cravel on the Saturday.
And a miserable me looking me at Cravel.
Yeah, so perfect.
But again, from a Dover point of view, we haven't won a Kent Derby in 17 games. But we're hoping that there is a little bit of, Maidstone feeling sorry for themselves. Clearly it won't be because Georgina Kobe knows what he's doing. So just hopefully David can at least put on a show, and hopefully I'm interested to see how many Maidstone fans come down to get a warm welcome. I'll probably say to them now, they probably won't get a warm welcome for Cravel when they did at Coventry from the stewards. So I apologise in advance now.
Absolutely. In the National League, another great result for FC United. 4-1 win at fellow relegation battlers Dorking to move. Well, they didn't move that far up the table, but they are now 17th. They still are only 2 points outside the drop zone, but up to 17th. Crucially, teams in between them and it and of the teams below
them. That division, John, is mental at the bottom.
It's insane. Absolutely insane. I mean, we've literally got Southend on 44 points in 13th. Dorking Wanderers have got 38 and they're 23rd. Of course, a lot of eyes now on York City. As I mentioned, Worthing are now managerless. That's because that's where the Worthing manager has gone. Adam Hinshelwood has done a fantastic job at Worthing over the last few years. Tempted to go up to York City and try and keep them up. And I think that's a fascinating appointment. So we're keeping a close eye on how they do, because he's done a great job at Worthing over the last few years. Bromley were beaten 2-0 at Eastleigh on Saturday, and ridiculously, Matt, Chesterfield, you asked me if I worked out how many points Dover need or when Dover can go down. Chesterfield need just 11 points to confirm their return to the Football League. They beat Barnet on Tuesday night. They are running away with it, as you say. So four more wins for Chesterfield and they will be confirmed as being back in.
Probably
the...
seem to be in second place for absolutely ages without, I think they've won one game in the whole of 2024. So it's,
yeah,
again, it's clearly Chesterfield are head and shoulders of everybody else. And everybody else, it's quite a tight division, as you can see from the bottom to the top. So, yeah, crazy times. But fair play to Danny Searle. Done a job for Ebbsfleet. Just, yeah. Look, again, I would say it's looking good for them. But again, how important is those three wins on the spin been? If they hadn't had that, you'd have thought they'd be in all sorts of trouble.
Absolutely. Both teams are at home on Saturday. Bromley against FC Halifax Town and Ebbsfleet are at home to Rochdale. And then on Tuesday night, nice short trip for Bromley, Oldham away on a Tuesday night in March. I mean, if that's not the dream, then what is, Matt Gerrard? You tell me what the dream is. That brings you up to date with all of the football chats across the county. Another busy week. You know, it just seems this season, Matt, I don't know if it's just me, but this has been quite the season, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think it's only going to get more and more exciting as the season goes on. I think from a Kent point of view, books will be written about the season 2023-24, I'd have thought, for so many stories about all our Kent sides. And how long we've got, we're really now, because the season finishes in about 6-7 weeks now, isn't it? So some of it finishes like middle of April, I think the National League does. So it's going to come thick and fast. Games now, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, and things should they start opening up? I don't really know. So, again, you know, it's the beginning. I think in the beginning of March, we could probably say the business end of the season, John. And there's going to be twists and turns for a lot of our clubs, but a lot
so
of our clubs
have
a lot to play for.
I had a few texts with Steve King this morning, and he was saying about, you know, the games they've got left to play. Deal Town have only played 24 league games. Still another 16 league games to play between now and the end of the season. And I was like, and if they get to the VAR semis as well, that's another two games in their schedule. They're going to be playing Thursday night soon. And I just hope it doesn't all derail it, because you know, it's going to be, this is where you have to stand up and be counted when you've got this many games left to play. And, you know, a lot of people saying that they think Deal are going to be there or thereabouts for winning the league, but it's, they've got to get the points on the board. And that's the thing, isn't it? So, you know, but it's going to be fascinating. And we're so lucky that we've got in both the Isthmian League South East and the Skeffel, we've got amazing title races to come over the next 2 months. And we'll be with you, look, pretty much every step of the way, won't we?
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm so excited how this season's going to pan out now for a lot of our clubs. Am I feeling that some of them have had such a good season, it could end in heartbreak, but not heartbreak. What their end goal is to get promoted. Yeah. End goal is to get promoted, but they may be rewarded elsewhere.
Absolutely. Have you seen the video I've sent you on WhatsApp?
I did see that. That's right up my street.
I thought you'd like that a lot. Yes. Yeah, the Skeffel Bielsa is absolute finest.
Did they get? I'll tell you, got booked for that.
I don't know.
Can you get Simbin as a manager?
I don't know. No, because I think the Simbin's on the bench, so that would be pretty futile, wouldn't it?
Don't move.
I can tell you that he was very, very proud of that moment because...
I love the opposition manager running on, giving it love as well. So even better.
It's absolutely brilliant. And the funniest thing was, I said to him, I said, oh, cool, how late in the game was that? He went 5 minutes into the second half. So there you go. That's the sort of tousery that I like to see.
Kingstown have been Margate in the relegation zone as we speak, John, because...
Chesson winning, are they?
Chesson are winning at Kingstonian.
That Chesson-Margate game is going to be massive in a couple of weeks' time, isn't it? When they finally get it played. You been watching anything on the TV?
Well, I signed up for Paramount to get Frasier.
Right.
Got a week trial, so...
Watching that then?
Yeah, it's...
Is it good?
It's not as good as the original Frasier. So I'm hoping that the original Frasier, if it's got renewed for another series, that once you get to know the characters and it gets a bit more cleverer than it is at the moment. So again, should you rehash these programs on the first series of Frasier or the second rehash of Frasier? Probably not, which is a couple of things that made me laugh, but nothing major. Apart from that, John, I haven't really been watching too much apart from FA Cup action on the television because the wife, as we're early now, has gone to bed. So I'll be watching a bit of football. I did fall asleep in extra time of Blackburn against Newcastle. So I didn't know the score until I woke up this morning.
I wish I'd had that luxury because I was still in the office, but I think if I'd fallen asleep, I'd have been very much frowned upon. I've been watching the latest series of Drive to Survive on my day off today while I've been doing my cleaning, so that's been quite interesting.
Are you into the Formula One, eh?
I don't dislike it. I quite like it. And Drive to Survive is a very good sporting documentary, actually. And I see there's a new series of Sunderland Till I Die as well,
I've seen two episodes of that as well. But it's nearly 2 years old, these ones, so I don't know why it's taken too long, so... You've got Alex Neil saying, yeah, what a great club this is. And we all know 2 months after they get promoted in August, he walks out to go to Stoke. So, it's taken so long.
One of my closest mates is a Sunderland fan. And when I watched the first series and at the start of it, they're all going, this is going to be our year. We're going back to the Premier League. Yeah. I just sent him a picture of a subtitles of that saying, watching this new comedy programme on Netflix. that did make me laugh. But
we're a good team. You know, we deserve to be in the Premier League. You know, like everything, if you're run piss poor, you will get found out eventually.
That's two minor swears on this week's show. He's back, everyone. He's back with the minor swears.
Anger.
Yeah.
You can read into what you might be all these things I'm saying.
Absolutely. And as long as you haven't got a pole in your back garden, you're all right, aren't you?
Exactly, yeah.
Absolutely. Anyway, that is pretty much it then, as Matt's not been doing much apart from watching the FA Cup. But thank you everybody for listening to this week's show. Thanks to our guests for joining us. And of course, thanks to Nick and Kian for their excellent account again of their Manchester United away day. Let's hope there's many more of those to come in the future for you boys. I really, really hope that there are. You can find us on Twitter at KentNLPodcast with X, whatever you want to call it. You can find us on Facebook, search for Kent Non-League Football, or you can search for Kent Non-League Football Chat and get involved there. We did go back to 2,000 followers quite quickly, Matt, you'll be pleased to know. So
yeah,
that's a blessed relief for us all. You can also find us on Threads and Instagram at Kent Non-League Podcast. I'm at John Phipps 81. Matt is at Matthew_Gerard. That is pretty much it. I hope that you all make the most of your extra day tomorrow. Do everything that you can with it or just go to work like normal. and be proposed to or propose if you are a lady. And of course, you know, don't get extra pay for this extra day, as everyone is moaning about on social media, because that's really funny and edgy. Really love it. Anyway, thank you everyone for listening to this week's show, and we'll speak to you next week on the Kent Nonny podcast.
Business end of the season. You can say that now. Well, not for Dover, because it's bugging up business end of the season.